when God decided to love you, he wasn't content to sort of love you at a distance. He wanted to get up close when that happened, which is why Christ took on human flesh.
Pastor Hans Feeney of Lutheran Satire talking about his presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
But even after Christ ascended to the right hand of the Father, God still wanted to dwell with you through the flesh and blood of his Son. He wanted to be physically present and in the room when he covered you in forgiveness and life and salvation. So that's why he's given his church the Lord's Supper, and that's why we should rejoice every time God comes into the room and invites us to feast on the same flesh and the same blood that won our salvation at Calvary.
You can meet and hear Pastor Hans Feeney making the case for the Lord's Supper at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. While it is true that once a father, always a father, my kids are grown, but I still remain their father in many different meaningful and ongoing daily ways, the groundwork of fatherhood never ends. But there is that period there, the new fatherhood, when the children are first being born, when they're little and when they are very labor intensive. They're always labor intensive, but at that those early years, they are very labor intensive. I did that phase of fathering when I was in my 20s, my early to mid-20s. So I had energy. I had motivation. I was able to survive on less sleep. I was able to allow that kind of abuse of my physical system because I was more resilient. I just healed faster than I do in my middle age. But you know, the average age of new fatherhood is no longer back in the early 20s. It's now somewhere near 30. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about first-time fathers, especially those who don't get started until they're, well, close to middle age. First-time fathers in middle age. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column titled 10 Tips for First-Time Fathers in Their 30s. Pastor Feeney, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You have a very, not a unique, but a kind of multi-layered experience with fatherhood. How would you describe it?
It was basically a tale of two eras for me. So my wife and I have three boys of our own, three naturally conceived and birthed children. I was 25 when my oldest son was born and just shy of 30 when my youngest son was born. And then we became foster parents a few years later. We were certified to be foster parents, but we only had kind of a couple of brief placements. And so then overall about 7 years after my youngest was born that we all of a sudden had a placement where we had three young kids with us. We had a 2-year-old, 1-year-old, and then a newborn baby. So on the one hand I had experience being a new father in my mid-20s, my mid to late 20s, and then essentially kind of starting over as a father with little babies in my late 30s. So yeah, there's kind of two different eras of that.
What did you learn, for lack of a better term, kind of the second time around, doing it yet again with the foster children and dealing with the demands that there are there in fatherhood?
Yeah, my analogy for it would sort of be like when you're watching NFL games and they'll talk about how a quarterback will somehow psych out the defense and they'll go, oh, that's a real veteran move right there. So in other words, he doesn't quite have the same arm strength that he had, maybe 10 years ago or so. Can't throw the ball as far, isn't quite as quick, maybe his release isn't quite as fast, but he's able to kind of outsmart the competition. And that's kind of how it is when you become a father for the first time in your late 30s, is that you don't have the spryness, you don't have the athletic prowess that you had. You're not quite as, it's not as easy to get up in the middle of the night, but you learn how to be a little bit more efficient with all of the things that you do. Like your method for changing diapers becomes a lot more efficient. You learn how to have a lot less wasted motion and kind of things of that nature. Plus, for me, one of the things that was really great was when we had the little foster kids come to us. My oldest son was, I think, 11 when they came to us. And parenting is about 8 billion times easier when you have an 11-year-old in the house, because they can do a lot of the stuff. And they sort of have to do it for free because they belong to you. So that's quite marvelous. That's very helpful.
One of the pieces of advice that you have is rediscover your lung strength. What do you mean by that?
Yes. Yeah, so the thing about little kids is, as I say in the piece, because they lack the capacity for speech, they don't have too many options for how they can show their love for you. So one of the ways that they prefer to show their love for you is to just expel all of their bodily fluids into your face holes. So whether it's your mouth, your nose, your ears, oftentimes into your eyes, kids will spit up and throw up and do all kinds of gross stuff into those spots. So when you're a young fella and you're a little bit quicker, you can kind of dodge and duck, you know, the puke rockets that come in your general direction. But when you're a bit older, you're not quite as spry. So my advice for guys who are starting fatherhood in their 30s is to take some time to practice holding your breath, so that you can go in and hold your breath for a good, you know, 2-3 minutes snuggling with your kid. Go in maybe with a pair of goggles and a pair of earmuffs, so that way, in the event that the kid manages to throw up into your face, that you're well guarded and well protected, and you don't accidentally end up inhaling last night's breast milk.
You say keep the dad weight off. Kind of an interesting follow up to the last subject.
Yes. So the dad weight is, that's obviously something that comes into that's a big part of becoming a father, is that you end up putting on a few pounds here and there, in large part because, one, you don't have quite as much time to exercise. You might have a little bit less energy to exercise. And two, because you're just kind of constantly snacking on sort of, you know, a little kid food. So you've got goldfish and things like that just kind of constantly around. And so one of the best things you can do, as I say in the piece, is number one, when it comes to eating, just keep a variety of healthy snacks around you, so that when, you know, if you're giving your kid handfuls of goldfish, you know, grab a couple of almonds on your way back to the pantry, so that way you've kind of got something you can munch on that's a little bit healthier than the stuff that you're oftentimes feeding your kids. And then, of course, as I say in the piece, most gyms that you can join nowadays will have, you know, free babysitting for your kids once they're, you know, about 6 months old or so, while you're working out. So not only can that help you lose weight, because it'll give you some time to have someone else watch your kids while you're, you know, working out in the weight room, but also your kids will come home with 427 communicable diseases after spending half an hour in the workout room or half an hour in the nursery. And, you know, obviously getting a whole bunch of different strains of the flu at one time is a really great way to cut some of those extra dad pounds.
Why is it important to familiarize yourself with classic children's television?
Well, because nowadays you can't really trust that all kids' programs are really kid-friendly. So a lot of shows on Nickelodeon and the Disney Channel, for example, have really become a hotbed of sort of progressive indoctrination. So you've got a lot of little kid shows that are, you know, aimed at preschoolers, that are you know, bringing in gay characters. And you'll find this in a lot of, you know, 7 to 10-year-old kid shows as well. So one of the things I suggest in the piece is to learn all about a bunch of classic kids programs that were produced back in the days when we weren't relying on children's television to indoctrinate the next generation of voters. And you'll come across a variety of wonderful programs. One of my favorite shows that my kids love to watch was Thomas the Tank Engine, which is a very wholesome show about a tuxedo-wearing despotic ruler who basically owns an island full of sentient train slaves that he's constantly threatening to dismember and have murdered every time that they aren't sufficiently useful. So Thomas the Tank Engine, the Sir Topham Hatt, who's the main guy, will spend all the episodes telling the trains that he's going to send them to the scrapyard if they're not really useful engines. And also one of the odd things about Thomas the Tank Engine is that aside from the wonderfully sweet engines Percy and Toby, basically all of the trains are terrible to each other all the time. And I kind of like Thomas the Tank Engine because it was created by an Anglican clergyman, so I also like the idea that I might one day too create, a multi-billion-dollar merchandising empire based off of a bunch of characters who are all the worst people you could ever hope to meet in your entire life.
With about a minute here before we take our break, your thoughts on Pokemon?
Oh, man. So Pokemon is a show that I missed kind of the first generation of it. I was a few years too old for that. And it all of a sudden kind of came raging back a couple of years ago, and my sons were really getting into it. And it's hard to describe if you've never seen it. It's basically a show about kid who goes around the world, and he's got all these different kinds of monsters that are called Pokemon, and they do battle with each other. It's probably kind of like Dungeons and Dragons on speed. So the show's very kind of frenetic and crazy, and the plot lines make absolutely no sense. So it will kind of teach your kids about hard work and teamwork and strategy and planning, and it will also utterly destroy their attention spans. So the added bonus of that is it will really make your kids fit in well with all of their friends whose parents bought them cell phones and smartphones when they were 5 years old and whose attention spans are just utterly destroyed by the time they go to elementary school together.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. Some tongue-in-cheek advice for first-time fathers, especially approaching middle age, on this Thursday, March the 28th. We'll have 10 more minutes with him on the other side of the break. We'll talk about your kids on social media. Then Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, will join us. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has pledged Tuesday to forbid the funding of abortion overseas. We'll talk about that. And Joy Pullman will join us to talk about the Republican Party and paid leave.
Sanctifying your child rearing with the Word of God. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues, Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151. Or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
As the older I get, the more I can see how much he loved my mother and my brother and me, and it did the best that he could.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday, March the 28th, we're talking about Tongue-in-cheek advice for first-time fathers. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. A little bit later, Carol Tobias joins us to talk about what looks like an extension of the Mexico City policy that was restored by Donald Trump early in his presidency. Then Joy Pullman of The Federalist will join us to talk about the Republican Party and paid leave. Pastor Feeney, you talk about not so much your kids' involvement in social media, but the temptation to put them on social media. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's usually good to keep them off of uncontrolled social media as best as you can. So if you're on, you know, Facebook, I'd certainly recommend tightening up your privacy policy so that the only people who can see your pictures are friends and, you know, people who are your Facebook friends. I definitely would recommend keeping your kids off of Twitter or other places where, and I know there are probably still tight settings you can have on there, but where it's certainly a lot easier for people, anyone in the world, to get access to this information. There's just a lot of ugliness out there in the world. And so no matter how cute your kids are, keep in mind that there's some sort of mathematical relation to however sweet and innocent the picture you are posting, the more insane and heinous and ugly people will get about you posting it. So the more you can keep your kids away from that stuff, the better.
Now, this is also coming from a guy who has put his three sons on social media with some success. I remember a Three Amigos picture from several Halloween.
Yeah, but that's on my Facebook page, where it's the only people who have access to that are people who are already Facebook friends with me. So that's a little more guarded.
So that the sane, that's only exposed to the sane among your Facebook friends.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. People I can trust. And if you can't trust people to keep your kind of respected privacy wishes with regard to your kids, then that's obviously what the unfriend button is. One of the chief reasons it's there.
What is your advice when it comes to sports fandom?
Yeah, so I think a really important thing for your kids to understand is that they have a responsibility to always side with their fathers when it comes to sports loyalties. So which is not always a problem if your kids are growing up in the same area where you grew up. But if you're like me and you've moved to another area and the games of your teams are not on local TV and you don't have the NFL Sunday ticket or the whatever the equivalent of that is, you know, for the NBA and things of that nature, oftentimes your kids will be really tempted to embrace the sports teams of your area. I'm sure there's some debate amongst parents as to whether or not you should allow your children to express their own individuality and determine their own lives and exercise their own self-autonomy when it comes to picking sports teams. I'm firmly against all of that. You should guilt trip your children into rooting for whichever teams that you want them to root for. Tell them that they don't love you enough. Tell them that you're breaking their heart if they try to like other teams. A really great way to do that is if you're like me. So I'm from Indianapolis, which is just a beautiful, wonderful, fantastic Midwestern city. No real traffic, not at all congested. You can get to a Colts game and get back on the interstate in about 5 minutes. It's marvelous. So if you're living in an area like New York or Chicago, it's really easy to pick on the cities on account of the traffic, on account of the congestion. The games are way more expensive. My kids, for example, when we moved to Illinois, I didn't have any baseball loyalties because there's no baseball team in Indiana. I picked up the White Sox and because I had a distant relative who played for them a long time ago. My sons decided around the time that the Cubs won the World Series that they wanted to be Cubs fans. And I've had to explain to my kids, Daddy has White Sox money. He doesn't have Cubs money. You can get White Sox tickets for $5. Daddy can take you to White Sox games. You have to have a giant bag of golden coins and huge tracts of land in European countries and offshore. You need to have a lot of money in offshore accounts in order to afford decent seats to a Cubs game. So stuff like that, is you just apply that parental pressure. It really helps if you've got some Norwegian blood in you and you're genetically predisposed towards giving a really good guilt trip. That really helps. So I really recommend just imposing your will on your kids when it comes to that stuff.
What advice would you give to those fathers who have had man's best friend as either their best friend or perhaps even in some cases not unusual nowadays, their substitute child before their real child is born.
Yeah, this has become a real common thing where people will, you'll have couples where they'll either be living together without being married, or perhaps they'll be married and they're waiting a while to have kids, but they still have that just profound biological need to parent something. And so on account of that, they oftentimes will pour out those desires and instincts onto their pets. This is where you get people referring to themselves as being, their fur babies and being a dog mom or a cat mom and things of this nature. One of my least favorite things in the world is when people talk about how they adopted a dog, as opposed to pushing it out of your birth canal. So just kind of silly stuff like that. So by the time people have kids, well, what happens is you all of a sudden you have the real thing. And the real thing is way better than the other thing. I love dogs. Dogs are great. But they're nowhere near as amazing and wonderful and fantastic as kids are, which you realize instantly the second that you have a kid. So there's a lot of times there's kind of this difficult sort of emotional set of circumstances where you're going, well, I have to kind of demote my dog. And how well is he going to adjust to that? I've been treating my dog like a baby for, the past 5 years, but now I have a real baby. What do I do? And one of the important things to remember is that no matter how much you baby your dog actually does want to be a dog more than he wants to be your own child. And especially if you have dogs that are kind of bred for their sort of their nurturing quality for children, or their protecting and guarding qualities for children. So, if you have Labs, German Shepherds, Newfoundland, stuff like that, real the kind of big dogs you want to get, as opposed to these sort of, glorified, large rats posing as small dogs like Chihuahuas or Chinese Crested and stuff like that. If you once you bring your baby home, your dog's instinct is going to kick in, and he's immediately going to have that thing where he recognizes, if I protect the baby, the master will give me more food. And so you'll find your dog just curled up, around your kid's infant swing very quickly. He'll adjust to that very well. Everything will be in its proper place, and you'll be great. Plus, the dog will be really excited. Once your kid's a few months older and is, eating goldfish in a high chair, that dog is going to be getting fed left and right by the baby. They'll develop a wonderful relationship, and things will be great. So you'll go from having basically a lousy version of a baby to having Old Yeller without the really sad, depressing last couple chapters of the book. That's what you'll go to when you bring your kid home. It's a fantastic transition.
Vaccination.
Yeah, this is one of the things I say in the article, is that nowadays, this has become sort of, I suppose, a big debate in our culture, is are you going to have your kids vaccinated? And as I say in the piece, it's a really kind of heart-wrenching decision. So do you want to pledge obedience to Big Pharma and have your child injected with a bunch of mysterious chemicals? Or do you want to think for yourself and read another mommytruths.blogville.net article about how vaccines cause circumcision while your child is in the hospital recovering from a case of the mumps? So that's really the choice you as a parent have to make, is do you want your child not to get a bunch of deadly diseases, or do you want to gain the respect of Jenny McCarthy? It's a tough decision, but I'm trusting that that all men will be able to make it according to their own conscience.
You speak with some experience on your next piece of advice for first-time fathers, and that is adopt a preteen.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, when my second run at being a first-time father, when we had these little foster kids come to us, all of a sudden I had three little helpers in my house, in particular my oldest son, who was 11. And parenting is so much easier when you have little kids around, because they love the kids, and they will play with them, and they can hold them and rock them, and they can feed them a bottle, and they've got smaller hands than you, so they can reach down into the crevices of the couch and pull out the toys that have fallen down there, and they can go wash off pacifiers and bring them back to you. And it's amazing and awesome. So if you're not like me and you don't have your own biological children who are at that point, there are a whole ton of kids in the foster system that are available for adoption right now. So I would really recommend, if you're in your 30s and you're a first-time parent, you're going to need some extra help, go adopt one of those kids, because not only do you get a bunch of free labor out of them, but you also get to do this amazing thing where you develop a great loving and develop this lifelong bond with a child who doesn't have parents, a child who needs a home, and a child whose life you're going to be saving by bringing them into your house. So if that's something you think you could do, I mean, I'm saying all this kind of in a halfway tongue-in-cheek thing, but in all honesty, if you're in a position where you feel like you could also be a good home for a kid who's a bit older, it would be a remarkable and wonderful thing to do, and I certainly think you should prayerfully consider it. Plus, an important thing to remember about having kids is that if you're having kids when you're a bit older, you're not necessarily going to have as much time to have a whole bunch of them. And you kind of want to have a whole bunch of kids because no matter how good of a parent you are, the odds that they're going to turn out well are not always super great. And especially if you're older when you have them, you need to make sure you got at least one kid who's not going to throw you in a nursing home the second you get a case of the sniffles after you turn 80. So I really recommend just trying to amass as many kids as you can in a short period of time. And certainly adopting kids in the foster system is a great way to do that.
You say one of the biggest mistakes that young parents make is waiting too long to bring their kids to church.
Oh yeah, it's an amazing thing. I can never quite figure this out, but pastors deal with this all the time, where people will have kids and they come and have them baptized, but then they're really infrequent with their attendance after that. And you kind of call them up, you say, "Hey, what's going on?" And they say, "Oh, you know, well, we're having problems with, you know, he's having a hard time sitting still, or having behavioral issues." And they have this fear that people are going to judge them and look negatively on them because their kids aren't very good at, you know, sitting still for an hour or so during the worship service. But the odd thing about it is that people somehow seem to think that their kids are going to get better at going to church by not going to church, you know, which doesn't work that way with anything else. You know, if you got good at running marathons by not jogging, I would be the greatest marathon runner in the history of the world. So you got to bring your kids to church, bring them consistently just so that they get used to coming. And likewise, the more often that they come, the more often that they're hearing the word of salvation that's going to teach them who Christ is, that's going to fill them with his righteousness, his love, his mercy, the more they're going to hear the word that teaches them how to love their neighbors as Christ first loved them. And likewise, as I say in the piece, again, this is only really sort of halfway a joke, is that if you walk into any congregation in the country, you're going to find there, in that congregation, you're going to find at least one, but probably a baker's dozen of these women. You're going to find at least one woman who's got grown children who are being annoyingly unprocreative and haven't given her grandchildren yet. And that lady is going to be hungry for grandchildren. And all you got to do is walk into that church, sit down next to that lady on Sunday morning, have your baby smile at her. And the second that baby smiles at her, that lady will give you free babysitting all the time for the next 10 years or until her millennial granddaughter decides that she wants to stop living in a $3,500 a month studio apartment in some downtown city so that she can work at a doggy spa. And so you'll have all this free babysitting, which is great because then that way you and your wife can go out and you go out on date nights. And the more date nights that you and your wife have, the more babies that can produce. And the more babies you have, the more, in particular, if you're bringing them to church, the more Christians you have in the world, which is always wonderful. And as I was just saying a moment ago, the more kids that you have, the less likely you are to get stuck in a nursing home when you are an old person.
Finally, you say, get ready to feel the anchor of peace. What do you mean?
Oh, man. So, yeah, one of the biggest lies our culture tells is that marriage and fatherhood are somehow these kinds of forms of slavery, that we look with such fondness upon the idea of bachelorhood, the idea that men are free, the idea that you're free to just live as you want and to not be responsible for anyone. But living entirely according to the desires of your own flesh and having no responsibilities is entirely contrary to the way that God designed men to be. And so there's no real true happiness to be found in that. And the wonderful thing about kids is that when you have a baby and you see that your wife give birth to that baby and you hold that child in your arms for the first time and you realize my entire life is now centered around providing for this kid, It's like this glorious anchor of peace that just drops and roots you into this one specific spot in the sea, that's your terrain and that's the life you're going to live and that's where you're going to find happiness and joy, as opposed to just sort of drifting aimlessly throughout the world and never belonging to anyone and anything. So that glorious anchor of peace that your child is, that's where you're going to find the truest and greatest happiness, because you know that where that kid is, that's where you need to be.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and a senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled 10 Tips for First-Time Fathers in Their 30s. Read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Hans, thank you.
Thank you.
Carol Tobias will be with us on the other side of the break, president of National Right to Life. Two issues to discuss with her. First of all, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has pledged Tuesday to forbid the funding of abortion overseas. We'll also talk about the House version of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act.
Daddy, what if I stopped loving you? What would happen then?
If you stopped loving me, the grass would stop growing, the sun would stop shining, the wind would stop blowing. So if you want to keep this old world going, you'd better start loving me again, again. Better start loving.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Matt Harrison, is the author of our Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. This new devotional resource is available in print and as an ebook. Learn more about Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Why am I joyfully Lutheran?
Are you living in central Iowa and longing for a church where the gospel is boldly confessed in all of its purity? Are you tired of hearing the latest purpose-driven How to Live Your Best Life Now TED Talk? Are you desperate to hear the preaching of the cross, which brings you and your children the knowledge, peace, and comfort of the gospel? Then come to Holy Cross Lutheran Church. Located in Carlisle, Iowa, at the southeast corner of Des Moines, we're a short ride from everywhere in the city. Visit our website, holycrosscarlisle.org.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com, churchmusicsolutions.com.
The living God is now defined by the living and risen Christ.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Do not fall away from the true God who died and rose again and lives for you.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.